Tonight, it is our great pleasure to welcome for the first time to the Many Rivers stage, Melissa Smith Baker, author of this charming, lovely, and obvious book with an obvious sense of humor about itself, How to Save Your Relationship from Yourself, Myth-Busting Guide to Successful Love. I've been showing this the front copy of this book over the last few talks in announcing this talk coming up. And I have to admit, this card that says to love, honor, and annoy with the wedded couple on the front has amused me every time I've looked at it. I am very much looking forward to this talk tonight. Melissa has been helping people for over a decade in her relationship workshops and on her website, where she's written blogs on every conceivable, to her at least, relationship topic. And so we are delighted to welcome her here to Many Rivers Books and Tea. Please join me in welcoming her.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I welcome everybody. And thank you. A nice introduction, Rob. I want to start out, I'm a teacher. That's really what I am. And I wrote a book so I could be a better teacher, really. And I'm writing some more books so I can be a better teacher. And I'm going to tell you more about my journey and how I got to write this book. But I wanted to start off with giving you a tool. Some of you will know about this tool. You might have done it. I've been in other venues where people have never heard of this before. And I call it a quick write. And so I'm giving you something that you can use for whatever is bothering you, a question, a sentence that you'd like to complete, a dot, 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 whatever it is. And I'm going to give you something particular to write right now, if you will so indulge me to do this. It's only going to be for a couple minutes. I'd love you to buy my book. Of course, I would love you to buy my book. And Many Rivers would like you to buy a book too.
Yes.
You know, right. But really, I want to give you a lot of information. Okay? Because that's really what, whether you buy my book or not, I like to give people information, and I'm really a relationship educator, a trainer. I'm trying to help people with long-term relationships. They're very challenging. So, and they're also terrific. So I would like to start you off with this, right? And now in some of my classes, and I'm going to call this kind of a class in a way, because that's what I understand more than book talks. I'm going to start you off with, there's nothing threatening about my class. You will not have to divulge anything that you write on this. This is for you. I actually teach classes at the Fairmont Sonoma Missionary Spa. It's a little tablet that you have here from the Sonoma Missionary. But I'd like you to just take something to write with, and if you have a little something, great, and if you don't, I'll give you something. I have pens and pencils too. I also have some pastels, or they're like crayons, because I was at a venue and people said, I don't really want to write, I'd rather actually draw something. And that's, you know, that's valid too, okay? So I have different kinds of things, and I'll just go around for a second. And if you'd like to take, maybe not that one. I have a lot of different things, depending on what you can write. Would you like a little something like that? That's good. Okay. And I have a pencil. Does everybody have a pencil or a pen? So I can give you those two. Or Teddy, you want something?
Yeah.
Okay. You have something? And if you don't like this, take a different side. And I'll give you something to write with. Yeah. Well, you could do that too. If you wanted to do iPads, I hadn't thought about that. You want to go this side? Is this okay?
Okay.
And I'd like you, I'll give you, everybody's okay with doing writing? Or it doesn't matter what language it's in. You know, whatever you want to write in, it's fine. But I've got pens here. Anybody? Pen for anybody? Well set. Anybody else? Pens. David, you're okay. Okay. I would like you... Okay, let me tell you about what a write is, this quick write is. I'm going to time you for just a couple minutes. And you can do this anytime, as I said, for any question that you have in your life, about your relationship, about anything, really. And, or you could do a, you know, I'm feeling weird, dot, 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 or because, dot, 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 and then you write on that. But this is what you have to do with this write. You can't cross out. You have, you, so don't critique it, just write, okay? It doesn't matter about your penmanship. It doesn't matter about your grammar. It doesn't matter if you, if it's just barely legible. You know, legible for you. That's it. You want to just keep flowing and keep writing. Do not cross out. If you can't think of something to say, okay, then just keep saying what you just said before, okay? Or what I'm going to ask you to write on. You keep asking that. Sometimes I've had to write that 20 times before it jump starts me for something else. Okay. So what I'd like you to do on this piece of paper, I'd like you to dump everything that you're thinking about, that you're feeling about. You just got here. What happened to you right before you got here? Maybe that's on your mind. Maybe you were listening to the radio before you came and something happened, whatever. And the reason I'm doing this is because anxiety, stress is the major part of your relationship. So I want you to get in touch with it. If that's all I can do, for you to really be aware that we all carry a lot of anxiety. So whatever it is, it might be good stuff too. I'm not saying, maybe you're really excited about something. I'm not saying it's all negative, what's going on for you, okay? So whatever is happening, I'm gonna give you a couple minutes, just go. So if you couldn't think of what it is, you could say, what am I thinking of? What am I doing? What am I, you know, what's going on for me? Okay? Thank you. So I'll stop you in just a couple minutes. can insult you. I don't know where you got with that, but I'm sure you had something to say. Okay. And what I wanted to tell you is how anxiety, there are other words, you know, stress is another word for it. And in my book here, I say, what is stress? What is anxiety? Here are its aliases: worry, upset, uneasiness, fear, unsettled feelings, feelings of intensity, nervousness, anxiety, etc. Stress is a synonym and encompasses all of these. Each anxious emotion produces the same thing, a disturbance to your sense of balance and well-being. Okay? And what I'm trying to get people to understand is that most of us feel unbalanced most of the time. Okay? I know some of you might be practitioners of meditation, do yoga or other kinds of things, and maybe in that moment you feel differently. But then you come out of your class, you get off the mat, and you feel something different. And in your relationship with somebody else, the way you react, the way you can't respond to something, usually is because you're not feeling quite right. You're a little bit off. So tonight, okay, we have about 45 minutes with each other now. I would like you to put a little check. You don't have to identify it, because some, you know, it's somatic too. You know, you'd like to just feel in your body that you feel a little weird. But I'd like you to just put a little check on your piece of paper at any point during this time that we're together that you don't feel really quite at ease. You know, I've certainly had my upset a little bit because I'm giving you a class and I have to get it together. And am I going to say it right? Am I going to dress right? Do I, you know, just before you come here, when I come for a presentation, I think about, you know, is my hair all right? And do I wear the right shoes or, you know, whatever it is. Or I had to take off one top because it has a stain and I had to put on another top. I mean, we all have these things in our lives. And they definitely affect how you are in your daily life, and particularly how you're relating to other people, and especially your mate. So I just want you to be aware of it. And the first step is just getting aware of it. I had no idea how much stress I carried within me. My husband didn't either, until we went to some therapy, and I'll tell you that story in a minute. And you know, we came out of a therapy session, we said, oh my God, we are riddled with anxiety. But it is not a psychological disorder, that's one of my myths. Having anxiety is a psychological disorder, that's what people think. It's not. It's part of the human condition. You can't eradicate it, you can just learn how to manage it. Because some of these anxieties, as I said, are good. They get you out of bed in the morning, they make you creative, they make you excited about life. There's still anxiety in that. I mean, I'm doing this because I really love doing it. I love talking to people, but you know, there's anxiety in it. You know, I could just say, hey, I'll just stay home and do nothing. Okay? So it's a wonderful thing to have this stress. And if you have too little, you've got to find kind of the right stress for what you can handle, kind of a happy medium stress, which is what I say in my book. You'll have to find that out. What stresses me out doesn't stress you out, and vice versa. You know? So and we'll talk a bit more about it a little bit later too. But I just want you to get aware of it. And if that's really all you get from the few minutes that you're spending with me tonight, I will feel that's really successful. Because you can't believe how important this is, that you understand that how you are reacting in life, what you're doing in life or not doing in life, what drives you, what doesn't drive you, it's about stress and anxiety. Okay? And it's not that something's wrong with you. It's not a pathology. It's just normal. But we have to get it. That's what we have as humans. Okay? So, that's the thing. So these little checks, just hope you have a lot of them on your page by the end of the night, because that means you're really getting in touch with how you're just feeling a little bit off. Okay. So, tonight is Hafiz said this. The subject tonight is love. And for tomorrow night as well. As a matter of fact, I know of no better topic for us to discuss until we all die. Okay? You cannot access love if you can't get, if you can't do something, can't get beyond your anxiety.
Can't get beyond.
Pardon me?
If
you can't get beyond your anxiety, you can't, don't have coping mechanisms, you can't love somebody. You can't even love yourself. That's why this is so important. And I've got 31 myths in my book, and I'd say underlying every single one of them has something to do with our anxiety. Something to do with stress. So, and I have one myth that I list here about anxiety, but that's the big one, and that's why I start with it. I'm going to go through a little bit in my book so you get a taste of what the myths are. Well, first of all, I should give you my intro. As I said, I'm a teacher. I'm not a therapist. Most people ask me if I'm a therapist. I'm not. I've actually never had a psych course, but I definitely love reading about psychology. So I've done lots of reading in it. What happens, and usually is a crisis, to get people motivated to do anything. My husband and I got married when we were 25, and we're almost 62 now, and about 12 years ago, we almost got divorced. We got a hold of the book Passionate Marriage by David Snush, and Rob and Jim said they'd order it. They did have this book in the past. It's by David Snush. It's a wonderful, amazing book. But most people actually will not read it. It's very thick. It's very dense. You have to study it. And people don't really like doing that.
He's also the one that wrote How to Be an Adult in Relationships?
No.
That's somebody else.
He wrote another book
sorry.
Called Intimacy and Desire, which
oh, okay.
is also good. But I'd say his best book, uh-huh. he wrote in 89, is Passionate Marriage. He's a talk therapist, relationship therapist, and a sex therapist. So he mixes a lot of sex in there too, which for some people they love that, and other people they don't like that. But I think most of us want sex in our relationships, our romantic ones, and most of us aren't celibate, and we would like to really understand that. And he does a great job with that. My husband and I got a hold of that book. We read it many times. We were both willing to do it for different reasons. I wanted to hold on to my to the marriage. We've been married 25 years, and we have a son. He was a teenager at the time. My husband wanted out, but he was willing to do it for personal growth reasons. So we went to a passionate marriage therapist. The other thing I really like about the therapy is that it's short-term therapy. We went 12 two-hour sessions, and you get it or you don't get it. You don't have to go forever. We did that, and then I started to write about relationships, and I started to do study groups, initially with his book, and then just on my own. I created my own curriculum, actually. I have a 9 subject, topic curriculum, and I started getting people to come, and people came of all ages to my classes, ages 20 to 85. I've actually had people in my classes who've been married 55 years, and they're still trying to understand something different about their relationships. People were coming from all different walks of life, from Catholics to agnostics to whatever they are, whatever they're practicing, whatever their education is, and I wanted to make things really simple, and that's something that Snarsh doesn't do. He makes things very complicated, and I just wanted to bring it down and simplify and distill kind of what he has, and then I went off on my own. And that's kind of how this book came about. And I saw people getting help. And I am, not from a religious or moral viewpoint, that I think people should stay together, but I really like seeing couples stay together if they possibly can. Not to grin and bear it, but to really understand something different and have something more fulfilling. And my husband and I definitely do. Not that we don't have peaks and valleys, we have not found nirvana. I don't promise that in the book, or any of my work. there's a lot of work that's constantly being done. I am not a guru. I am not a relationship expert. I am just somebody who's in the trenches with you. I don't know what your, you know, some of your people might be single or never married. I mean, I've held kinds of people in my classes. So, you know, I don't know where you're coming from. You know, you're here for some reason. I hope I'll find out with your questions. Because I'm going to go through a few myths right now, and then please ask questions. And, you know, if you can't hold the questions, if you need to write them down, please do, and we'll just take all the questions at the end. Okay? So the first myth that I have in this book is, well, it's actually not quite, is it the first one? Yeah, okay, it's the first one. Is the soulmate myth. And I'm going to tell you a little story about that. And I'd like you also, when my introduction in this book, I talk about how, please take any story that I have. It might not be your story, but we're all humans and we're variations on a theme, okay? So to make it more yours, say, oh yeah, something kind of like that happened to me too. And that would make it be more meaningful to you, okay? Well, for the soulmate one, I don't believe in soulmates. I believe in that you make your soulmate. You just don't find your soulmate. And I had an interesting thing happen in class. An astrologer came to my class. And she was married to an astrologer, but they had gotten divorced. And she was trying to wonder why it was going on. How could I possibly have gotten divorced from someone who was my perfect soulmate? We got married under the perfect star. We did everything right. We consulted everything. And we should have been perfect for each other. Well, I guess they were for a time, and then they weren't. And about 10, 12 years later, they ended up getting divorced, and it was very acrimonious and not a happy scene, and they'd had a couple children. she came to my class just to try to understand what relationships could be. So what you have to get is what are relationships, okay? What happens in a relationship? So the myth of where I talk about that, that's quite good, is called, well, I think it's good, yes, is the something feels wrong myth, okay? And I'll tell you a little bit about that one, is that mostly people feel that something is going wrong with their relationship, okay? I'm here to tell you that actually something's going right about it. You just don't get that that's what it is. Because every couple has a honeymoon stage, whether it's really during your honeymoon or another point, you always have feelings, and I do a little rundown of different stages. You have feelings of being at ease, then you have a feeling of being elated, and then you have a feeling of being anxious, you know? And then you have a feeling of getting all compromised, and then you have a feeling of being constrained, and then you have a feeling of being stuck, and then you're squeezed and you're suffocated. Now that's a chronological order that you go through in a marriage. It could take you a year, it could take you 5 years, it could take you 25 years. But you really want to get to freedom and intimacy, because that's what everybody really wants, okay? But how are you going to get there? You're going to have to squeeze, I call it the big squeeze, through the eye of the needle to get there. So you have to understand that the marriage is working on you, okay? That dynamic is working on you. And this could happen in the middle of an argument. And everything could be going pretty good. You know how that happens. You're at home, and your husband and your wife comes home, and then something blows up, and oh my God, it's something within about 2 minutes. It's a whole different scenario than you ever thought it would be. And you can go through all these. You're feeling at ease. You're feeling elated. You're feeling anxious. You feel, oh my God, I just can't stand it. I'm just suffocating. And then, but you want to get to another part, if you can, okay, to this feeling of freedom and intimacy. So I try to help people with just relationship dynamics so they understand those. And it definitely does happen for all people. Some people will never have to look at this book necessarily. Maybe they've got something that they're doing, you know, pretty well on their own. But it definitely happens to them. Don't think that you see this perfect couple. In my last book talk, I had someone saying, I just want to be like Yoko Ono and, excuse me, John Lennon. And all I could say is, my God, you have no idea what they were really like. You know, you have no idea what any couple is like in private at all. We all carry a persona, and you know, we want to look good, and it could be a totally different thing. So you actually, you know, you could be idolizing someone, and it's not at all that way. And it's happened to me actually several times, and I find out that people have gotten divorced 2 weeks after I think they look like the greatest couple. Okay? So beware of that. Another myth that I go to, and you know, feel free to ask anything about these, or we'll carry on, is the understanding myth. A healthy relationship means that both partners must understand each other. I completely bust that myth, because you can't understand anybody else. Okay, you can have compassion for them, okay, but you're never going to get somebody else. I don't understand what my husband does on a daily basis. I would never do what he does, and he would never do what I do. You know? And I have a little story here, is that I listened to I think it was NPR, there's this wonderful guy in Paris who hosts dinners once a week, and he's been doing it for 30 years. He's an artist, and in his atelier in Paris, you can go. I actually have his website email right here, and you can say, I'm in Paris and I'm coming for dinner. Mm-hmm. And he has his friends get together, you know, a really nice dinner, and he charges you a nominal sum, $20, something like that, for a really great meal. And you go to his place, and the interviewer at NPR kept on saying, what a great thing you're doing. You're really promoting cultural understanding, and it's fantastic. And he said, are you kidding? People don't get each other. They're all from different religions. They're all from different cultures. They got different languages. They can't speak to each other. And you know what? I just hope they can love each other in spite of all that. You know, that's why I get people together. I hope they can love each other. And then I said, that's so true. That's exactly what you have to do with your mate. You know, you hope you can love them, but you're not going to get them. And a lot of people spend most of their time saying, I wish I could get my husband. Why is he doing all this? Or why can I, how wish I could get my wife? You know, why would she be doing that? It's just, I would never do that. You wouldn't, because you're two completely different people. You're two completely different people on two completely different paths. You're humans, you know, so you can understand each other on that level. But you're not going to get why your husband wants to do this and your wife wants to do that. So stop even trying. But you can still love them. This is a kind of an, I was looking here. This is a good myth, inequality myth. I might stop after this one, so you can ask some questions if you want to. Often people, my husband and I did this for a long time. It's superior, inferior. I thought, you know, my family's superior than yours. I was brought up better. My husband had more money, so he thought that was better. You know, you're doing this comparison thing a lot. And you know, you're not doing that in the best of moments, but in the worst of moments, you bring that out in your arguments. And we got really sick of doing that all the time. And we stopped after we realized that psychologically, we have a lot of interlocking puzzle pieces. We do fit together. It doesn't manifest on the outside that we do, but on the inside we really do. So I'll give you an example. I was brought up as a golden child. I could do no wrong. My parents adored me. I was spoiled, only girl with some brothers. You know, great. I thought that's a great life. You know, you do that. My husband, black sheep of the family. He could do no right. A bad boy. Okay, and that's often typical. You know, you can get the girl, good girl, bad boy, or vice versa. You know, coming together in a relationship. But boy, did we get psychologically what's going on for us. We have parents who never really knew who we were as people. It's just we fit into a mold. We fit into a little cookie cutter thing. Everything you're doing is bad, and everything you're doing is good. You know, and we really struggled a lot, and it's still difficult for us. We needed a lot of approval. You know, I needed a lot of parental approval, a lot of approval for everything that I was going to do in my life. And of course, it didn't look like my husband did, but oh, he was looking for it. He was always looking for it. Why didn't his parents approve of him for anything? So once we understood that, we stopped doing an argument. So that's what I try to do for people. If you can understand something different, you will not keep on doing the same thing. If you don't understand it, you won't be able to get to a new something in the relationship. Okay? So those are the myths. And how I do the myths, I don't know if people have kind of perused the book a little bit. You know, I try to just make it really fun, really simple, really normal. I mean, we all suffer so much. Actually, I've got a really good, I heard this at a wedding, and it was just a perfect, one of the sisters of the bride gave this. I can't say that I'm so happy about who said it, but here we go. You'll probably know who said it. To love is to suffer. To avoid suffering, one must not love. But then one suffers from not loving. Therefore, to love is to suffer. Not to love is to suffer. To suffer is to suffer. To be happy is to love. To be happy, then, is to suffer. But suffering makes one unhappy. Therefore, to be unhappy, one must love, or love to suffer, or suffer from too much happiness. I hope you get the sense. And that's what love is about. And it's by Woody Allen. And, you know, Woody Allen, as we know, we can all have different ideas about Woody Allen these days. But it sounds a little bit like Shakespeare. That's true. You probably got it from him. So, is there anything that I've talked about so far that you'd like me to explain a little bit more? I'll go into some more myths, or anybody got any questions? In some of the classes, people have come in with something they really want to get asked a question about. So if it's not even anything that I talked about, that's fine. Ask the question if you'd like to.
Here's one.
Or not. Yes. Yeah. Cool.
You said something that seemed to contradict yourself, so
okay.
I'd like you to elaborate.
Sure.
First you said that you didn't get your husband and he doesn't get you.
Yeah.
But that you did, close to the end, say you did get him psychologically and he gets you.
Oh, on that kind of thing. But really, understanding what people kind of do with their lives, I guess I'll put it that way. You know, I don't understand. I, you know, in some ways on inner workings, like I understand these interlocking pieces that we both share.
Yeah.
But other things, there are other things about who he is that I don't.
So you don't understand why or what he gets out of doing it, or?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Exactly.
But that doesn't keep you from loving him anyway, and taking hands off in that area. And just,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I mean, I still need, if for instance, like if I've got, my husband likes to watch more TV than I do, and if he's just watching TV all the time, and if we have no relationship, and we have, you know, if he doesn't do any work, and he does, you know, well, I'm going to say something. You know, this is not good. I don't feel that you've gone over the top. I mean, he can be mad at me about that, but, you know, basically I'm going to say something, make my stance. But if I feel that he's doing other, because people make judgments. I mean, everybody's making a judgment about what they feel is a good thing to do in the world and not a good thing to do in the world. And I want to give him wide space. He wants to give me space, too. But we still, you know, make our comments about things. But there's still a lot about, I'm not going to get, you know, from that, if you just see it from a TV thing or movies or, and I find this in my women's group, oh my God, my women's group, it's just almost all the women are saying, why are all the guys, maybe they're 60s, I don't know, if they're all watching TV.
Well, also, when you say making comments in that way, it sounds like sniping or carping.
No, I think it's
kvetching.
Kvetching. I mean, you say it, and then you got to give up on it. You know, you say it.
That's different.
Yeah, it's different. It's different. Yeah, you're not taking the cleaners on it. You're just saying, you know, as you do with your children. I mean, when you have children, you say what you feel is a value. You know, there's nothing. Okay, but they're not going to have your same values actually. I mean, I remember saying that to my son quite a bit. I said, you know, you're 18 years old. Until you're 18, this is the value of our family. What you do beyond that is, you know, up to you. But this is our value, and you're going to have to hang in there with us on this till you get out of here, you know? And that was from, you know, we don't smoke dope, so you're not smoking dope in the house. We don't agree with that. We wouldn't agree that you just sit around and, once again, watch TV all day or do video games all day. You can't do it. You can do that when you're over 18 if you want to, and you don't live with us. So people are, you know, constantly doing that and creating their lives. So, hope that answers your question.
Yeah.
Well, I've been involved in this relationship for almost 3 years, and I refer to this man as my boyfriend, but
uh-huh.
he refers to me as his friend.
Uh-huh.
And so, for me, a major component of my relationship with him is me feeling that he is withholding. Okay, I'm always ready to do anything, you know, take a trip, go here, take a walk, blah, blah, blah. But I'm the one that has to do most of the asking if I want my needs to be met.
Mm-hmm.
And he very rarely asks for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's scared to engage emotionally, or
mm-hmm.
maybe he's incapable, I don't know. But
mm-hmm.
the soulmate really kind of hit me because he said, well, I haven't met, he's 80 years old.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But he's a great dancer. We go dancing at the Flamingo.
That's
okay?
Great.
That's the best part of it.
Okay.
But he says, I haven't met my soulmate yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so this soulmate thing, you know,
You'll have to go back to him and say you're not. It's a myth.
Melissa,
yeah.
Is it Melissa?
Melissa.
Melissa
yeah.
said that there's no such thing.
Yeah, yeah,
that's what I'm going to do tonight.
Go for it.
I'm going to go back there.
Okay, that might help him out. Yeah. No. I don't. There's a lot there that you had to say.
Yes.
To kind of address.
I don't expect you to. You
yeah.
know,
but thank you for telling.
I just wanted to throw it out.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
There's a lot there. Anybody else? Anything else?
So where is your husband now?
where's Chris?
We're here, husband.
What? No, he knows I talk about him. He knows
no,
I talk about him. What?
I was just joking.
You're just oh, where is he? Is he watching TV?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Exactly.
He might be watching movies or whatever he's watching. I don't know. I mean, actually, you know, I've written a lot of blogs on technology. It's, you know, this is really very challenging for couples. There's no doubt about it.
Technology,
yeah. The internet, being able to just go off. I mean,
mm-hmm.
just think. I mean, you were all on the older side here. I mean, you know, you had one TV for your family, and you all watched TV together.
Yeah.
And now people are just, okay, I'm watching this, and you're watching that, and then, boop, I'm watching that. And it's, you know, it's kind of too, where's the connection time? So people are yearning for
yeah,
that
yeah.
connection, but they also want to do what they want to do. So, do you have a question? Okay.
Yeah.
You do. Okay.
Well, can you notice me holding up my two fingers?
Yeah. Okay.
That means sense of urgency.
Yes. Okay.
I'm witnessing something inside of me, and I walk around like this all most of the time.
Okay.
Is that because I'm always dealing with that sense of urgency? I'm just trying to make a comment about just witnessing what you're feeling, and that just the witnessing, acknowledging that there's stress going on all the time helps to neutralize or to make it manageable. Just witnessing, you don't even have to try managing it.
Right.
But just witnessing it.
Right.
And because it has to do with something that I sometimes call the unheard voice.
Mm-hmm.
And if you witness it, it doesn't even have to be heard sometimes. But just something shifts.
You're right. You're right. I think, you know, for me, it was just, it still is, because, you know, I'm human, I'm going to always have anxiety, for just to admit it. You know, if my husband and I have a fight, and I'm defending myself, and I'm just not, you know, I'm really upset about something, you know, I've got something running inside of me that really has nothing to do with you, actually, often does nothing to do with him. It's something else. And if I can really get hold of that, that's really important. In fact, one of the myths here, thank you for that. One of the myths in here, which is actually the communication myth, because I don't really believe in techniques for communicating. I think people already communicate, but they don't want to hear what the other one says, so then they say, hey, we don't communicate. I give an example, actually, of my husband and I, of the two of us going through a stupid, mundane conversation that just went weird. You know, we're talking about something and all of a sudden we went off. So I do it in three levels, and one of it's just like the first one's a content level about what was going, we think what's going on, you know, just he I don't want to go into the whole thing because it would take too much time. But then the second time that we had the conversations a few days later, I said, let's just have this conversation again because we're not over this yet. And then we got down to something that was more emotional and we got more in touch with that. But then the other thing was just getting really into confronting ourselves, which had nothing to do with this conversation at all. It had something to do with something completely different, and it was about the anxiety that each one of us brought to this moment. And it became an intimate moment when we actually could finally have an intimate moment with each other because we just cleared all of this. So I hope you get a chance to read that because it's actually really good. Rundown. You know, it's very. I'm trying to be specific in this book with these little stories, with examples. You know, I didn't want to be too abstract. I was trying to bring people down so they could work with it. So, yeah, do you? Go ahead.
Just kind of to underline that, and that I hold this idea that I'm quite capable.
Mm-hmm.
And conscious, capable, conscious. And just from what you're just saying, I'm aware that over the last few weeks and few days, specifically, there's been a couple occasions in the last few days with my wife that there's been breakdown in communication, you could call it a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is that it has nothing to do with the content. And I just started realizing today, because of some things that she was saying, and looking at myself, that it really has to do with some overlying emotional things that we're both uneasy about right now. And it's making us less capable of tolerating misvibration or something. And I really grew in compassion today as I began reflecting on that and understanding, you know, wow, and looking at what I'm contributing to this. My own anxiety,
mm-hmm,
is causing stress or whatever, you know. And
mm-hmm,
but anyhow, I'm just that I know that we've said many, many times, you know, that whatever, most of the time, whatever you're fighting about is what is not whatever you're fighting about.
Right.
And it usually has to do with other stuff,
mm-hmm,
deeper. And I'm just seeing that, particularly, you know, right now, this week, today, in terms of that, this stuff that's causing friction.
Right.
Is because of some underlying anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anytime you're blaming, shaming, justifying, defending, you've got a lot of anxiety going on. That's really where it's all coming from. Because you're not going to be able to stop it. And of course, couples want to just get rid of their anxiety. Everybody wants to get rid of it. So they just dump it on their partner. It's like a hot potato. You know, I'll give it to you because I really can't tolerate it. I can't stand this. Somebody's got to take this away from me. So that's what we do. And so if you can, once again, it's all starting at this stress, anxiety level. So it really is the most important thing you can be doing, you know, to understand your behavior in the world. But the thing is, if you start pathologizing it, because I have a lot of people telling me, I don't know, it's maybe because over 60 or I don't know what it is, but people are saying, I'm going to a therapist because I've got so much anxiety, and there's so much anxiety, and this anxiety, and this, you know, I think people are making a lot of money off of the whole anxiety thing. But I think if people could just say, hey, this is human,
It's really human to be anxious. We're all scared. You know? One of the greatest things that you're scared about is that there's loss. You know? And your partner won't stay with you. They're gonna die, or you're gonna die. You know, we got that big one going all the time. You know? And or they're gonna walk out on you, or you're gonna walk out on them. I mean, you have to deal with that. And it's underlying that, you know, there's just that. If you don't know how long, no matter how great you think your relationship is and how you worked on, you know, on yourself and everything else, it could still fall apart. It's not causal. It's not that you do all this and you're going to get this. There's just no guarantees. And we want it. We want the guarantees. So right there, you'll live. All this is just existential angst that we've got, you know.
It's angst about the ambiguity that we spend a lot of time really not knowing which way anything is really going to go, right?
Right.
I mean, you just get in the car every day and you don't know what's happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You don't know. You just go for a walk. Just going for a walk.
Right.
So, you know, it's really quite, it's very heroic being a human being.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So you got to acknowledge it. And definitely acknowledge it in your relationships, because you're all your relationships. I mean, what I'm talking about, you know, I'm talking about romantic ones, but they're really for all your more intimate relationships. It really helps to know this stuff for your kids or anybody that you have a deep relationship, friends and other people too. I can have anxiety, you know, jealousy of a friend or something. That's from anxiety. That's from something that's going on with me. I'm feeling competitive with somebody. Mm. So once I get that, I just say, just as you said, I just admit it. I just admit it. I have a lot of anxiety. Boy, just that, I'm halfway there.
Well, what happens when you say that to your husband?
Oh, it's huge. It's way better than blaming and shaming and defending myself.
I mean, does he respond to that?
Yeah, and he'll say, yeah, you know, I think you have a lot of anxiety, but you know, I actually do too. Yeah, he'll come forward too. But he's not going to come forward if I'm after him. No, you know, you can't be nitpicking at somebody all the time. You know? It really opens up. It's been amazing how much we have gotten, like David, you were talking about just, you know, what's happening. You just admitting that you have the anxiety. Okay, I'm human. I'm not perfect. I've been meditating all day, but I still don't have it right. I came home and, oh my God, we had this big fight. I thought I had it right.
And I think the beauty of this, the real beauty, is that it's not pathological.
Mm-hmm.
You see, because we have got it really deeply ingrained in us. I gotta say it this way, excuse me, but that we're all fucked up.
Right.
It really, there's a basic thing somewhere in our culture that says we're all really messed up.
Right.
And probably it's because human beings are really messed up. And we really want to see human beings on this earth. The earth would be better off without us.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying is, it's not pathological. It's human.
Yeah.
It's part of the process of learning to grow up
right. And
be an independent, autonomous person in relationship to another person and other people and other things.
Right. But we want to be superhuman. I mean, I think that's it. This was a, you know, big thing for me. I think I always wanted to do everything. You didn't want to be like a cartoon character. I mean, it's not possible. But that's one of our, you know, we idolize it. I mean, you know, or whatever we think the movie star is, or the person that was in the talk the other day that said, I just want to have a relationship like John Lennon and Yoko Ono. You know, okay, but... You know, it could have been a horrible relationship. We don't know. Well, I know they're separated for a while, but you know, we don't know. But we've got something going on in our minds that we got to be like something.
but it's not possible.
Yeah, I just became aware of something just now this second. I presented this who I call my boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
and thrilled with holding and blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I called him before this program started,
yes.
and I said, "You never guess where I am." He thought, "I'm down here on Main Street." You walk down here. I live about 8 blocks up at Burbank Heights in Orchard. So you walk down here all by yourself in the dark. He says, "Call me when the program's over, and I'll come and walk you home."
Lovely.
Now, is that a nice
thing?
Well, I wasn't going to give him any credit for it.
No, I know. Yeah, you're right.
And then I thought, hey, wait a minute. You know what, Joanne?
Sure.
He just was concerned about you.
Right.
Anyway.
Right. Well, the other thing I'm going to say is you might get, because I'm actually, before I became this relationship teacher, and I still do this work too, I'm a piano and French teacher.
Ooh.
So a great word in French for a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and I tell this to my students, they always love it, is petit ami, which means a little friend. So, you know, sometimes people get hung up on the semantics, like he's calling, you're saying a boyfriend, and he
uh-huh,
says you're a friend.
Friend.
He could just call you a little friend, but you say it in French, petit ami.
But you say it slower.
Petit, like little.
So you don't pronounce the second T, you don't say petit.
You say petit ami. You have
petit
it's a little
ami.
Bit of T. It's
oh.
a little bit of T because it's going into the vowel.
Okay.
And actually, I was on a long distance French thing the other day, and this young woman in Berkeley was saying, I don't know what to call my boyfriend. It's such a terrible name. Boyfriend,
yeah.
partner.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just call him petit ami. And I'm sure, oh, that's great. That's great. So, that might be helpful because sometimes the semantics can just drive you crazy. Anything else? And I'll continue with a few more myths because actually it's 8:30.
It's 8:30.
Oh golly, went fast. Well, maybe we won't continue with any more myths. That's it. But I hope I've given you a little something to chew on. Or did anybody have any other comments or anything they'd like to say?
Do you have any more myths?
You won. Oh yeah, 31.
Yeah,
31. And I actually could read another. 31.
Why don't you read the list of
yes,
myths,
I will.
Or at least part
thank
of
you.
It, because it's really worthwhile.
David's read my book, so it's okay. He's actually acknowledged in the book. Actually, in the beginning, he's very helpful in creating this book. Soulmate myth, commitment myth, stress and anxiety. Emotion, oneness, importance, something feels wrong, understanding, which we did, something feels wrong, we did, inequality, replacement, victim, hate, that's a great one actually, love, self-care, partner, sex, desire, adoration, forever, honeymoon, intimacy, communication, compromise, time, insight, fairness, reality, habit, trust, relationship, fairy tale. So those are all myths that I went through in this book. But as I said, I could bust a whole bunch of them. And these really do damage you. Believing these things, you got to believe them in a different way. And when you do, you get a different relationship. You've got to bust them. And it might not be just the way that I'm telling you here, but you might have another twist on it. But they're worthwhile examining. Okay. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
And Rob is going to, you closing us up? Oh,
thank
sorry.
Thank you so much. And, thank you all for coming tonight. We have just a couple things to mention. There's a donation bowl over in the counter there, and we encourage you to contribute to it, which we share with our speakers and also retain half to help maintain the space for further events. The book right here. Take a look. Check it out. It's very reasonably priced, and we encourage you to do that. And there's all kinds of flyers for the Festival of Conscious Parenting over there. Please take one as you leave and share it with friends. And thank you so much for coming tonight. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
See you in March.